Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for tonight's special episode of TCCP is none other than Nottinghamshire's comms intern, Mr. Matt Wiley. So Matt, first things first, mate, thank you very much for coming onto the show yet again. I believe this is now three shows in a row, so thank you, of course, for helping the platform out. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Really good, thank you, mate. Yeah, it's certainly been an interesting one with the uni deadline looming, but no, it's been a good day. And yeah, of course, you're more than welcome for me to be on here. I love it. So all is good.
Top man, Matt. And obviously two very different results for our counties this week, as we'll get into when the show gets on. But Matt, I say we get straight into the main content. And honestly, there's no better place to start this week, is there, than down in Taunton, where Somerset finally broke that seven-game losing streak by hammering Warwickshire by an innings and 82 runs at the Cooper Associates County Ground. Now, before, Matt, I'll get your opinion on the game itself, and I'll have my views as well on what was a very uncharacteristically poor performance from the Bear and Ragged staff. I did just want to give a bit of a shout out, if I may, to some people who made those couple of days down in Taunton very special. So to Ben, to Spencer, to Harry, to Annie, the two Pauls, Alex, and the entire production team at the Cooper Associates County Ground, just wanted to give them a big, big mention. And also to the man, the myth, the legend himself, Mr. Sam Dalling. You know him from the Somerset live streams. Just wanted to give a mention to him and his family as well for their fantastic hospitality. Although the result on the field wasn't brilliant, obviously I was absolutely gutted on the way back up from the West Country to Birmingham. I must say I was treated like one of their own. So big up to Somerset and big up to each and every single one of those names that I've just mentioned. But Matt, in terms of on-field performances, before I get into my piece about the Bear and Ragged staff this week, what did you make of Somerset's bounce-back ability in this particular encounter?
Really, really impressive. I noticed you've dispensed with the Warwickshire shirt that you had on last week, haven't you? Really, really surprising, wasn't it? Because you'd imagine that coming into this game that Warwickshire would be heavy favourites to make pile more misery on Somerset, but it wasn't the case, was it? I mean, maybe, I suppose it's the old adage, you've always got to win one at some point, haven't you? But to win it in such a way as well, to you know, by an innings, that's a really crushing win. So obviously we've got to wait and see if there's a bit more evidence if Somerset have really got their mojo back. But yeah, some of those individual performances, I mean, that to put up 458 in the first innings when it's been the major cause of your troubles have been batting problems, that takes a lot of, you know, that takes a lot of, well, character, a lot of doing, really. You know, and not to make things any worse for you, mate, but I do understand that Warwickshire opted to stick Somerset in, didn't they, having won the toss? So, yeah, it was certainly interesting, but, you know, I've just got to say fair play to Somerset, really. I think you were there, you were at the game. I'll leave the minutiae of what exactly went what went wrong and what went right for Somerset down to you, but, yeah, it just seemed to me like Somerset have got that character back, and we've got to wait and see now if it continues.
Absolutely. And in the wider picture, that is the important thing, isn't it? You want to make this the new norm now, as opposed to those early season losses. You mentioned there about the crushing nature of the victory. This was actually the first innings victory for Somerset at Taunton since 2012. And this is a ground where Somerset have not lost to Warwickshire County Cricket Club since 2014. In first-class cricket. So, yeah, it is a little bit of a fortress when it comes to Somerset taking on the Bears, is the Cooper Associates County Ground. But you mentioned the performance. I want to mention Somerset beforehand because they were thoroughly deserving winners in this contest. And you mentioned already the 458 all-outs. One player in particular who stood out to me massively on that first day was Matt Renshaw. Not only was his application at the crease absolutely superb, but there are not many county cricketers who I've seen dispatch Danny Briggs in the same way that Matt Renshaw did in this particular fixture. I thought he was absolutely sensational up the top of the order. And I do think that that will be the go-to opening pairing for Somerset heading into the foreseeable future, going with Lamonby and Matt Renshaw. The skipper, Tom Abel, as well. We mentioned it last week, didn't we? The 150 not out. It was a case of Abel just needing that one big knock. And he looked in superb touch down in the West Country this week. He scored 70. And I've got to be honest, I didn't expect him to get out. At some points, he just looked absolutely impeccable at the crease. The drives were fantastic. Little nudges and nurdles off the pads onto the onside. He looks really special this week. Unfortunately, couldn't get the three figures. He was dismissed by Rob Yates, funnily enough, with his part-time off spin. It was a bit of a strange dismissal. Glove down the leg side behind suits, Michael Burgess, but I thought Tom Abel was absolutely sensational. And then with the ball, in particular, in that second innings, Jack Brooks. There was a lot of talk before this game about Jack Brooks' performances and in terms of how integral he would be in this particular game, because you've got the control, you've got the potent nature of an Overton or David, but you need someone else to provide those key breakthroughs. And in this particular game, Jack Brooks did exactly that. You could see how much it meant to him as well, with those fantastic celebrations to the Somerset stand. All in all, a brilliant performance from the home side. On the flip side of that, though, from a Warwickshire perspective, quite possibly one of the worst games we've had in a long time. And that's saying a lot, because last summer, I think back to one game in particular, and that was Durham away, where at one point we were 30 for 8 in the first innings. So it wasn't quite as bad as that with the bat in hand. But in all seriousness, in terms of Warwickshire's attitude in the field this week, that just was not good enough at all. So much exasperation, so much shrugging of shoulders. It honestly looked like from ball one, the Bears didn't want to be there this week. And I don't know what's happened. I don't know if there's a particular reason for that. But the body language was massively off. And it wasn't just me saying that. There were many people in the stands, many people in the press box. It was one thing which people picked up on straight away. And in terms of this game, there isn't much to analyse from a Bears perspective in terms of on-field performances. This was a massive off day, with the exception of Oliver Hannon-Dalby, who yet again led from the front in fantastic fashion, taking 5 for 89 from his 31.4 overs and being the spearhead which the Bears so desperately needed. But other than OHD, just a complete lack of fight, a complete lack of character. And I've got to be honest, I think even starting with the toss, Warwickshire massively underestimated the fights and the spirit with which Somerset would come out fighting in this particular game. You know, this is a side, I've mentioned that proud record already, against the county champions. They haven't lost here since 2014. They're a side looking to snap a 7-game losing streak. And Warwickshire turned up and acted as though the game would be won within 2 or 3 days. And it was won within 3 days by the opposition, by a team which looked a lot more up for it, a team which was a lot more clinical, with both bat and ball in hand. And yet for the Bears, it's just one of those, not to sound too cliche, but you really do want to forget about this performance. There is just one thing, though, that I hope that this team doesn't forget, and that is Somerset's fight. Because this is a great lesson for this side. You might be county champions, but there's no such thing as a bad team in Division 1 of the county championship. There's also no such thing as an easy victory, especially away from home. So we will compartmentalise it for this week. It was an off day for Warwickshire. They're going to happen. You have to bounce back. But I do hope that these lads have learned a massive lesson that you cannot underestimate any side in this year's competition. So fingers crossed we can bounce back in Lancs, but for Warwickshire this week, a massively, massively disappointing performance, a deserving result as well. The fact that it's been raining in Taunton today, I don't think Warwickshire would have deserved the draw. So fair play to Somerset, worthy winners. And yet again, I just wanted to give a massive mention to the people down at Somerset. People really do make clubs great. And what Somerset have got going on in terms of the live streaming, in terms of the people associated with the club, from fans to stakeholders, just everybody involved in that collective. I've absolutely loved my time down in the West Country. So shout out to Somerset, and obviously congratulations on a worthy victory in the fourth round of the LV County Championship. But Matt, moving on then from Taunton and that absolute annihilation at the hands of Overton, Davy, Jack Brooks and Jack Leach, let's go to Chelmsford, where Essex and Northamptonshire played out a very intriguing draw at the Cloud FM County Ground. Now, in terms of the game itself, Essex won the toss and elected to have a bowl first. Now, this decision looked to have paid off quite superbly in the opening exchanges. Sam Cook dismissed Northamptonshire skipper Ricardo Vasconcelos for a three-ball duck in the very first over of the game. But after this, Northants took complete and utter control. Will Young, who's turning out to be quite the signing for the East Midlands County, scoring a valuable 63 up the top of the order, which was supplemented quite sensationally by the likes of Luke Proctor, who scored 113, and number 10 batter Gareth Berg, who scored 75, as those two racked up 105 runs for the ninth wicket to take the East Midlands County up to a total of 390 all out by the end of their first innings. Now, in response to this, Essex were in all sorts of peril. 83 for 8 within the first 46 overs of their innings. And the only thing that saved Essex from basically a humiliation in this game was a certain Shane Snater, who scored 79 from 94 balls, which included 10 fours and a six. So big up to Shane Snater. I thought he was absolutely sensational with the bat in hand in this encounter. But aside from that incredible performance from Snater, Essex were eventually cartwheeled out for 193 runs by the end of their first innings. So at this point, the lead was 207 runs for Northants, and Vasconcelos decided to enforce the follow-on. So Matt, here's the first question for this segment. Was that the right decision, considering the fact that the pitch wasn't really offering a lot? It is Chelmsford as well, so even though we've had the end results and we know it didn't quite turn as much as it usually does, you do have to factor in the Simon Harmer effect, as it's affectionately known. Do you think it was the right decision to enforce the follow-on?
See, this is a weird one for me, because I'm almost always in favour of enforcing it. I think that, I mean, obviously we've seen it there in the Somerset Works again, how much the mental edge can play can have an effect. And I think that if you've just bowled a team out and they're trailing massively, then you have that mental edge. They know that when you enforce the follow-on, you're essentially you can dictate the pace of a game, and you know, the all sorts of in the air kind of ideas and the play and everything like that. But literally, in the rules, once you ask the other team to follow on, you are essentially saying, this is our game now, you're basically going to do what we tell you to. And that's a massive thing, especially in cricket, where the mental side of it plays such a thing. So I would say yes, I would, if I was a skipper, thankfully no one's asked me to captain them yet, but I would always enforce it, I've got to be honest. But then again, you know, you look at the conditions, you look at Essex's grit, don't you? And you look at the ability to dig in there. And ultimately, they fell short, didn't they? I mean, pitches can change, can't they, throughout the course of a game. Conditions can change and batters can, you know, fight back against that sort of mental disparity. But yeah, my first instinct, I can't blame Vasconcelos for enforcing it, because I would have done it. I would have.
In fairness as well, it almost did pay off. When you think about it, I know they would have had to obviously complete the run chase. It's very easy to say, well, they could have won in better conditions, but they did reduce Essex to 328 for 9. There would have been a few more overs, I suppose. They could have tried to have a run chase, but fair play to Essex. And in fact, I just wanted to mention this as well, in the second innings, obviously, the likes of Paul Walter, he scored 93. Matt Critchley scored 47. Those two shared a 100-run stand for the fourth wicket. But also, Adam Wheater, he showed a completely different side to his cricket this week. He scored 33 and out from 174 balls. He was dictating the strike. He was shielding the tail-enders at the other end. I was really, really impressed with the fight and the grit which the home side actually showed in this game after that appalling start in the first innings. But aside from Essex's batting, any excuse to talk about this bowler, because as long-term listeners will know, we're quite big fans of him here at the Counter Cricket Podcast, and that is, of course, a certain Ben Sanderson. Matt, a few words on this absolute icon of the county circuit. In that first innings, 4 for 32 from 19 overs, he bowled 7 maidens, was causing all sorts of issues on this Chelmsford wicket. Just how impressive was he in this week's game?
He just flies under the radar, doesn't he? He puts his head down, he does his job, and he does it quite brilliantly, really. I mean, I know I've mentioned this idea in the past, he's never going to get picked up for England. Northamptonshire have got him for good, but what a player they've got. I mean, it's the control, isn't it? It's the, you know, building that pressure. You know, when you've got your opening bowler building that pressure and just able to keep the scoring down, keep the batters scratching around and not really sure where to go. But then at the same time, he's also got the wicket-taking ability. You know, you look at maybe someone like Gareth Bird, for example, who had a lower economy rate. 16 overs, 1 for 17. But, you know, he took one wicket. But Sanderson took 4. You know, he's got everything. He puts it on the spot. And there's this thing as well, you look at somebody like Glenn McGrath. Now, forgive me, Glenn, I'm not going to quite compare Ben Sanderson, who has done it in the county game over the best part of a decade. But, you know, Glenn McGrath, obviously, it's not always about express pace. And this is actually something that my dad told me because I'm a bowler, I would say, fast bowler, let's say, seam bowler. But this is something that my dad told me, it's quite keen to express upon me. It's not about express pace. It's about landing it on the spot, making sure that they can't score off you. And eventually, the rewards will either come for your fellow bowlers, which makes you not just a great bowler, but a brilliant team player, or for you, which makes you an even better bowler. And yeah, I mean, Ben Sanderson, Northampton took him off Yorkshire when he was quite young. He played for Northamptonshire. I'm sure I remember him playing for Yorkshire about 2011, 12. So I think, yeah, Northamptonshire have had him for the best part of a decade. But, you know, just then you spot that ability and they've reaped the rewards of it.
They most certainly have. And I'm absolutely elated for him. I'm a big fan of Ben Sanderson. You mentioned there the lack of England opportunities. Who knows? Never say never, Matt. Never say never. Look at John Simpson in the ODI side. Anything can happen. I'm still retaining a slither of hope for both Ben Sanderson and Darren Stevens. It may never happen, but who knows? Stranger things have happened in the wonderful game of cricket. But just to kind of wrap up the game between Northants and Essex, Matt, just one final question. Who do you think will be the happier of the two sides? Personally speaking, I think it'll be Essex. But then again, on paper, Northants may not have expected this result out of this game, because you look at last summer, for example, immediately you cast your mind back to the divisional stage where they got skittled for 44 runs and they lost that game by an innings. Who do you think would be the happier of the two sides with this result?
I would stick with Essex being happy of the two sides. I would agree with you there. I think, you know, Northamptonshire, yes, they might have been beaten last time out, but that almost shows that they had nothing to lose when they came here. You know, no one's really expecting them to do much against Essex, one of the strongest teams in the country. And you've got that, you mentioned that right there, you know, they've got that behind them to further push that idea that, you know, no one can really expect much of them. So to get as close to victory as they did, I mean, I think Essex have got to be, you know, they certainly won't be happy, will they? But they'll be breathing a sigh of relief. And, you know, maybe Northamptonshire can say, we're quite happy with this because we proved we can compete. But ultimately, you'd have to think they're a little bit disappointed because they got so close. And this would have been a colossal win, wouldn't it? You look at the likes of who Essex have got in their team, and again, being bowled out for 44 last summer, that would be some recovery. So I think Essex have got away with one there.
Yeah, I'd agree, to be honest, Matt. They've pulled the rabbit out of that proverbial hat, haven't they? But fair play. Again, it's something that you have to do. Sometimes innings are not going to go your way. So it's all about the character, the fight, the determination with which you bounce back with. It's something, again, which unfortunately Warwickshire didn't show this week, but Essex most certainly did. But aside from that game then, I say we go up to Headingley, because there are some conversation starters, shall we say, some points of debate from this particular game, in particular surrounding the latter stages of day four, which we'll get onto. But let's talk about Yorkshire and Kent's draw up at Headingley. Now, in terms of the narrative of the game, Kent were bowled out for 291 runs in their first innings. It wasn't a terrible innings by any stretch of the imagination. Daniel Bell Drummond notched up his second century of the 2022 season with a classy 109 from 194 deliveries, which was aptly assisted by supporting knocks from Jordan Cox, who scored 68, and Ollie Robinson, who scored 58. In response to this, and I want to pick up one of those conversation topics now, if I may, Matt, Yorkshire scored 571 all out. Now, before we get on to talking about Harry Brook, Dad Milan and Dom Bess, three players who really impressed for the White Rose in this particular fixture, I have to bring up quite an alarming stat for the Kent fans out there amongst you, because we're now four games in to the 2022 LV County Championship. And in terms of first innings runs, Kent in four games have conceded 2,243 runs across four innings. That's an average of 560.75 runs per first innings in the 2022 County Championship. The team's bowling average at the moment is 62. 62. This is not going to win you games in county cricket. It's as simple as that. And again, in this game, conceding 571, it doesn't matter how good a form a Daniel Bell Drummond's in, or a Ben Compton, or a Jordan Cox and Ollie Robinson. They've got to find a solution to this, haven't they, Matt? But the problem is, where does that solution come from? They haven't got Matt Henry in the team yet. Darren Stevens was omitted from the squad, staggeringly. I know he hasn't had the greatest of starts of the summer, but even his experience, this is a ground where he basically rejuvenated his career in 2019 and he wasn't selected. Grant Stewart has now been ruled out with injury. Where do Kent go from here in terms of those bowling options, Matt?
It's really tough, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, obviously the Jackson Bird is another absentee, isn't he? I know Kent kind of got panned a little bit, didn't they, when they recalled Grant Stewart from Sussex, because I think there was a little bit of accusation of they were acting in bad faith. You know, why did they loan him to Sussex if they were just going to take him back after one game? But they've got bowling, you said it there, they've got bowling problems of their own, haven't they? You know, the omission of Darren Stevens is bizarre. If you're going to keep him around, and if you're going to pay him, you know, fundamentally, just basically, if you're going to pay him, then you've got to play him, plain and simple. If he's not playing, then he'll just retire. I think, to be honest, Darren Stevens has probably reached a stage in his career where he's now doing it for the love of it. You'd have to think that he's built up enough money from, you know, 3 decades of playing professional cricket that he's doing it for the love of it. So, playing, because he's the wild card, isn't he? I mean, you mentioned him there again in the conversation for England. When you score 237 and take a 5-4, for a start, when you score 237 on a ground that's traditionally favoured bowlers in the past, i.e. Headingley, sterling, absolutely sterling. So, Kent picking, that was bizarre. But then, where else do you think? I mean, Grant Stewart, they recalled him and then he didn't even take a wicket, did he? In the Yorkshire Indies, he opened the bowling.
And he got injured, though. So that's another...
He did get injured.
That's another worry.
Yeah. But he still managed, 20 overs without taking anything. And, it's a worrying stat. I've got to be honest, I actually saw it just before we started this recording. You put it on Twitter, didn't you? And I did see it. And I was, wow, that's just... Yeah. So they're gonna have to come up with some solutions and rapidly, because, frankly... I mean, I know we're not coached by Andrew Gale anymore, but to allow Yorkshire to put up 571 is, deeply worrying if you can't.
Well, it is. And again, we mentioned this earlier on, actually, in the review shows in 2022. I mentioned about Glamorgan's opening woes, which we'll pick up the conversation with later on in today's show, because that's something which they've worked really hard on. And in fact, it's something which they've improved upon heading into the fourth round. This is now becoming a very, very worrying trend for Kentons. Until Matt Henry comes back, unless you're going to play Harry Podmore, you could bring in Jaskaran Singh. I mean, those are some options. Hamid Kadri, I'd like to see him back, or you could go with James Logan. James Logan, who bowled decently in 2021. They've got to explore their options. But for the time being, this Kent side, they're not going to win games. You cannot concede 560 runs in innings. Is absolutely insane. It's insane. And not all of these are flat wickets either. This one at Headingley, there was a little bit in the wicket. So, yeah, worrying times for Kents in the bowling department. But on the flip side, I think you have to give tremendous credit to those three Yorkshire players who I mentioned beforehand. Harry Brook, a career best 194 from 265 balls, 21 fours, 2 sixes. It was a tremendous knock from Harry Cherington Brook up at Headingley this week. I was gutted, absolutely gutted. I let out a visceral reaction when he got out. He gloved one behind to Ollie Robinson on 194. I thought he was destined for that double ton and he thoroughly deserved it. But unfortunately, just 6 runs short of that major milestone. But I thought he batted quite sensationally up in Leeds this week. And then Dawid Malan is just simmering beneath the surface. He's had a really good start to the championship in 2022. And yet again this week, he was dominant. From ball one, he set himself up at the crease. Anything loose was dispatched with complete and utter disdain. He went to go on and score 152 runs and was just a bastion for Yorkshire in this particular innings. And then Dom Bess as well, thought he was really impressive in this week's game, scored a quick fire 89 from 119 balls while batting at number 7. So Matt, obviously as a resident Yorkshire fan, I'm guessing quite happy with that batting display, to say the least. And then with the ball in hand, it was a really interesting day four, wasn't it? I mean, Ken got off to a slightly sluggish start, but Ben Compton, the name on everybody's lips in 2022. He continued his electric form in this year's championship, scoring 93 from 220 balls. Ollie Robinson, he scored 85 and out. Grant Stewart scored 90 from 91, which included 10 fours and 4 sixes. A great performance, to say the least. Very entertaining from the Italian all-rounder. But then, late on the day, Steve Patterson, the county veteran, just ripped through the Kent lower order, took figures of 5 for 54, which meant that Yorkshire would need 114 runs from the final 21 overs of the day's play. So here's where we set the scene. 21 overs of the day left, 114 runs required, and the teams have just come out onto the field at Headingley. The floodlights are on, they're just about to take the light reading. And unfortunately for the Yorkshire fans out there, the lights was insufficient. And this game, which was so beautifully poised for this incredible 20-over run fest on the end of day four, was brought to a rather anticlimactic end. So Matt, I think I know your answer to this, to be honest, but when it came to the light levels, do you think they should have played on?
Oh, yeah, of course they should. Just play on in the dark, don't you? Yeah. I've got to be honest. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, and I'm sure somebody with a deeper understanding of the laws will correct me. But the light, is at the discretion of the batter, is it not? The light is offered to the batting side. And for me, the batting side there are chasing the wind. So why would you not offer it to the... I know the umpires don't want to take a risk, and if somebody gets injured because the light is too low, it looks ridiculous. But, yeah, I mean, the bad light rule, we've seen it at test level, it's needed sorting out for years, hasn't it? But, yeah, it was a bizarre... It's one of those occasions where you keep saying, where cricket doesn't help itself, does it? I mean, I know that you can tell, obviously, sometimes cameras make the light look better than it is. But, yeah, it was a strange one. It was a really strange one, and it was really disappointing. And I think, to be honest, I mean, Kent will be the happier of the two sides, definitely. But, you know, when Yorkshire are chasing, if it is a little bit gloomy, if there is a little bit in it for the bowlers, it's a day four pitch, then, you know, they could have had a 4 or 5 down and we would have been, suddenly they would have been on top and, you know, they might have had another 10 overs to take 4 or 5 wickets to bowlers out. You know, there was something in it. This wasn't just the typical, this wasn't just Yorkshire, you know, it doesn't sound great, does it, coming from me, but I don't think this is just Yorkshire moaning. I think this is, you know, Kent can be disappointed, will be more disappointed, of course, but yeah, and I think the game as a whole, it's just more examples that it's shooting itself in the foot, really. Like it's got a, I know there's not a lot maybe you can do to make a massive difference. You know, the light is going. It is still, you know, it's only the 1st of May. It is still not quite high summer yet, is it? So, yeah, but it's difficult. It's difficult. And I don't think the right thing was done here, I will be honest.
You see, Matt, the inner cricket lover would agree with that, but apparently the light was actually really bad, and that's coming from Yorkshire fans at Headingley. Okay. Because I did ask people up there. They said the light was appalling. It was quite funny on Twitter because there were people saying, "Oh, looks bright as day, looks like 12 o'clock noon." But according to what I heard in terms of reports from the ground, it was quite gloomy and dark, and yeah, it didn't get any lighter from there, unfortunately. But obviously, a big result for Kent. They're probably lucky to get away with it, if truth be told, and for Yorkshire, again, promising signs. It's been a decent start to the summer of 2022 for the White Rose. But yeah, Kent's bowling, that's just something which does worry me and something which we'll be keeping a very close eye on heading into the rest of 2022. But Matt, aside from that game at Headingley then, let's go all the way down to the South Coast. Let's go to Southampton, where Hampshire and Lancashire played out a rain-affected draw at the Aegeus Bowl. Now, I've got to be completely honest, I was gutted that the weather played spoil sport for this one, because before this round of fixtures, this was the one I was looking forward to the most. You have two extraordinarily gifted seam attacks going at it on a seam-friendly wicket, and we saw this in full flow. During the first innings, Hampshire won the toss, elected to have a bat first, and were reduced to 40 for 5 within the first 15 overs of the game as a result of some excellent swing bowling courtesy of a certain James Anderson, who hopefully, fingers crossed, will be back in the test fold in the summer of 2022, and Hassan Ali, who took 5 for 45. When we talk about the most impressive county signings in 2022, Matt, he's got to be up there, hasn't he? Along with the likes of Shan Masood, Ben Compton, Harris Rowe's been quite impressive for Yorkshire as well. Hassan Ali's name, he's in the mix, isn't he? He's been very impressive for the Red Rose.
Absolutely. He's been really, really impressive, hasn't he? I mean, he's an international quality bowler. There's no question about it. And it's always really exciting to see these players come into the county game because they raise the level of everyone around them. You know, batters have to be better prepared to deal with them. The same, you know, your team benefit from facing him in the net, your fellow seam attack benefit from watching him go about his game and how he carries himself, and just everything improves. And he is that level of quality that he can do that. And it's just been really, really good to see.
It most certainly has, to be honest, Matt. A great addition to a very strong overseas pool, it has to be said, in the 2022 LV County Championship. But talking of quality signings, this is a great excuse for me to talk about one of Hampshire's signings. Not necessarily this summer's, but in 2021, and that is Nick Gubbins. I couldn't believe it when they signed him from Middlesex. I thought that was a really shrewd piece of business from Hampshire at the time, and he's repaying their faith quite brilliantly so far in a Hampshire shirt. Since joining the club in last year's championship, he scored 618 runs at 44.2 in the 10 matches that he's appeared in so far. This includes 3 centuries, 2 of which funnily happened to occur in this particular fixture. But I just looked at his first innings performance in particular, 101 out against that Lancashire seam attack. Fair enough, they didn't have Saqib Ahmed, they didn't have the leg spin of Matt Parkinson, but even then, going up against the likes of Anderson, Ali, Tom Bailey, I thought Danny Lambold well as well. That was a really, really gutsy and gritty knock from Nick Gubbins. So very impressed with him this week. So that got Hampshire up to 246 all out by the end of their first innings. And in response, I was in the press box at the Cooper Associates while this was happening. I couldn't believe it. Just wicket after wicket after wicket after wicket was falling. And Lancashire, in their first innings, were 105 for 7 within 39 overs. Keith Barker, figures of 5 for 67. Mo Abbas, 3 for 59. Those two causing all sorts of damage up the top for the home side. But after this shocking start, who would have thought, from a Lancashire perspective, that Tom Bailey would have been the hero in this week's game, with the number 9 batter scoring 59 and producing a vital riposte with a battling 94-run 8th wicket stand alongside new signing Phil Salt. So Lancs eventually reaching 240 all outs by the end of their first innings. And in response to this, Hampshire batted really well. And aside from Nick Gubbins, who again, as I mentioned beforehand, turned up yet again, scored 130 in the second innings, yet another very classy innings from the Hampshire middle order batter, Ben Brown. What a signing. What an extraordinary signing. A coup. Probably one of the best pieces of business in county cricket in the year 2022. He continued his very solid start to life in a Hampshire shirt with a fluent 72 from 160 balls. Unfortunately, though, as we mentioned beforehand, rain had other ideas. The weather in Hampshire, not exactly sunny this week, shall we say. In fact, lots of persistent rain, lots of clouds. But it was a very anticlimactic finish to what could have been a very engrossing game of cricket. Matt, I asked this question beforehand when it came to Essex North Ants, and I'll ask this question again. Who do you think would be the happier of these two sides? Because Hampshire, I thought they batted a lot better this week. This will be the Achilles heel of the Southern County if they are to win the county championship. They've got to bat better. If they can bat and get these 300, 400 plus run totals, they'll win games with that seam attack, with Abbas, Abbott, Barker, Wheel. You've got the spin of Liam Dawson as well. They are an outstanding team. But then on the flip side, Lancs, a real off game with the bat in hand. But I do think the likes of Anderson, Bailey and Ali did bowl quite well. Danny Lamb also picked up 3 wickets in the second inning. So who do you think would be the happier out of those two sides?
It's a lot closer, isn't it, than Essex versus Northants. But I think it will be Lancashire who are happier because, you know, yes, there's the prospect that they're chasing 340, 350-ish to win the game, which, you know, do that and, you know, you're not quite immortal, are you? But it's an achievement that gets remembered because, you know, it's a big total. But on the flip side, that's exactly why Lancashire will be the happier. Because it's an achievement that gets remembered, that underlines how difficult it is and the fact that on the face of it, they were pretty unlikely to do it, weren't they? I think this was Hampshire attempting to bowl Lancashire out. This was not Lancashire attempting to chase it down. I mean, and yeah, I know they've got the hitters and, you know, Phil Salt, and they've got some brilliant batters in Josh Bahanan. It's, yeah, they're a talented team and they could have had a real go at it. I think they would have had a real go at it. But, you know, day 4 pitch, that Hampshire bowling attack, I think they had to be favourites, and I think therefore, like, Lancashire won't be, ooh, we got away with one there, but they will be, yeah, if you really look at yourself in the mirror, you would have thought we were unlikely to win that one, and we'll take a draw and move on to next week.
I think that's a fair assessment, to be honest. I think both sides, obviously, they would have wanted the victory, Hampshire as well. Because you think back to that staggering performance last year and that encapsulating final game, the thriller up in Egbeth to unfortunately deny Hampshire that first county championship since 1973. I think there would have been a want, at least from the Hampshire faithful to, you know, get some payback as a result of that Lancashire victory in 2021. But I think both sides will take that. two of the stronger sides in this year's county championship. We've mentioned about the strength of the seam attack. And I do think Hampshire, I know you've mentioned Lancashire will be happy to get away with the results. But I think in terms of overall positives, with the emergence of Nick Gubbins, with Ben Brown continuing to score runs, Keith Barker doing what Keith Barker does best, causing all sorts of problems with the new ball alongside the likes of Abbas and Abbott, I actually think Hampshire will take that. I think Hampshire themselves will be quite happy. So a very, very, what to say, a very fair results, a very fair results at the Aegeus Bowl in the fourth round of this year's county championship. But Matt, aside from that game then, let's go to the final encounter in Division One for this week, Gloucestershire versus Surrey, on what seems to be an extension of the M5 at the Brightside County Ground. Surrey 603 all out. Now on paper, that sounds as though there were tons of runs from the top order, which was supplemented by the middle order. However, that wasn't the case. In a high-scoring game like this, staggeringly, Gloucestershire reduced Surrey to 37 for 3 within the first 19 overs of their innings. But in a magnificent twist, at least for the Surrey faithful amongst you, Jamie Smith just produced a batting masterclass. 234 and outs from 430 balls, 34 boundaries, some excellent strike rotation. I thought he showed some great balance, some great assuredness at the crease. We mentioned the England conversation, don't we, Matt, quite often here on the podcast. We alluded to the likes of Bohannon. Harry Brook will also want his name in the ring. If we're thinking long term, we're thinking 5, 6, maybe 7 years later down the line, does Jamie Smith have a chance of going into that England Test middle order?
He's got a chance. He's got every chance. And I mean, you know, it looked like, you can't deny the talent. You know, you don't get that level of, you don't score 234 and stay at the crease for that long without a heap of talent. And, you know, there's a lot there with him. And I think, you know, to be honest, it kind of sums up the current state of England's Test team, doesn't it? When we're talking about it being so unsettled and the fact that, oh, he could get in, you know, quite frankly, you could replace the entire probably top five and no one would bat an eyelid at the moment. That's how unstable the whole thing is. But it's really heartening that while it's maybe a little bit disheartening that the current crop aren't doing particularly well, it's really heartening that we do have talent and options coming into, you know, putting themselves in the frame to possibly replace. And Jamie Smith's one of them. I mean, Bohannon, I know I said, let's give Bohannon time. I'm going to say the same about Jamie Smith because you don't want to cause the confidence to crash. You know, he's got 234. He's really good. Let's give him the season. Let's give him time. Obviously, this pitch was flat as well. You've got to take that into account. But let's give him time. Let's wait and see what happens now. And if he carries on doing it, then we put him in. This is what I'd almost like to say as well. I'm not quite sure what's happened to the Lions either. We seem to have England Lions were really prolific in playing games maybe 4 or 5 years ago. That, you know, A teams would regularly come here. Lions would regularly go out and play proper full 4-day first class games, series and tours and things like that. And that, to me, only seems like a good thing. It's a logical step. If you want to see how a player performs at that next level up, but you don't quite want to take them to the very highest level yet, then put them in the one in between. That seems to be the logical thing. But I think at the moment, Jamie Smith is a standout county professional who wouldn't look out of place, but I want to take a cautious approach, as I have with other players like Josh Bohannon, Harry Brook. Maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I'm a bit biased towards I'd want to keep him for Yorkshire, but same thing again. Let's just wait and see.
Absolutely. To be honest, Matt, I'd agree. You know, we've got an absolute gem here in Jamie Smith. He's only 21, though. So we can play the waiting game. But I'm just looking at his first-class record so far. 1,653 runs in 45 innings. An average of 41.32. And it's the way in which he scores his runs. I mentioned this earlier about Tom Abel, didn't I, for Somerset. There are just these really eye-catching cricketers. We'll mention another one in a minute. but they just keep you hooked to the action. And I feel like Jamie Smith is one of those. He's also a very talented wicketkeeper. So that's another string to add to his bow. I'm really, really impressed. So Jamie Smith, one to watch out for. And of course, a massive reason as to why Surrey did get a draw in this particular game after rescuing that situation from 37 for three.
I should just quickly point out as well, he's not just a solid red ball batter either, is he? He's got that explosive white ball technique in his locker as well, so he's got it all.
He has indeed, Matt. Yeah, 42.5 list day average, as we saw in last year's Royal London One Day Cup. Serious, serious prospect. But we were mentioning beforehand about the England middle order. I must say, it was quite good this week, and yes, the wicket was quite flat. But I thought it was good to see the likes of Ollie Pope. He scored 84. And Sam Curran, he scored 64. Back in the runs for the London-based outfit. So impressive showings from those two, I think, on this wicket. And then Jordan Clark. Jordan Clark, I don't think we've given enough props to on this podcast. So I'm going to change that right here. Because not only did he get the wicket of Bracey in the Gloucestershire innings. I was gutted for James, though, because he got out for a three-ball duck on one of the flattest wickets you'll ever play on. But not only is he leading this Surrey bowling attack quite brilliantly, he's coming up with these really valuable middle-order runs. And this week was no different. He scored 137 from 177 balls, 15 fours, two powerfully struck sixes. Jordan Clark looks in really good form. And in a Surrey side, I mentioned this about Ryan Patel as well, in a Surrey side, where you do look at the international stars, the likes of an Ollie Pope, a Sam Curran, when they had Kemar Roach, Hashim Amla, Rory Burns. They're important, but just as important are the domestic players, the likes of a Ryan Patel, the likes of a Rhys Topley, the likes of a Jordan Clark. And Jordan Clark, after leading Surrey's wicket column in 2021, really is establishing himself as quite the player in a Surrey shirt. So big up to Jordan Clark. Very impressed with him this week. And talking to someone on the Gloucestershire side who I was incredibly impressed with. Again, long-term listeners, you'll know I absolutely adore this guy as a cricketer, Mr. Chris Dent. Chris Dent, take a bow. That's all I'll say. Not only for a fantastic double century, he scored 207 not out in this game, but he also became the 33rd cricketer in Gloucestershire's entire history to surpass the 10,000 first-class career runs mark. Matt, if you could, a few words on one of the most professional, one of the most classy, one of the most consummate county pros in the entire circuit, Chris Dent. Let me know your thoughts. What's he like as a cricketer, and just how impressed were you with his performance this week?
You've summed it up really well, haven't you there? That's exactly what he is. He's just, for years, he's just gone about his game, hasn't he? And he does it so well. I mean, to get, you know, you've got to cash in when you get these opportunities, like this pitch, like these conditions, and he's done it. And, you know, that was not a poor Surrey bowling attack. Yes, the pitch was in his favour, we've talked about that, but, you know, you've still got to score them. And this was a strong, strong Surrey bowling attack. And he's just fantastic, he really is. And the experience comes to the fore because, you know, when you're facing down players like Rhys Topley, like an informed Jordan Clark, it's going to take guts, however flat the pitch is. And, yeah, he's amassed everything there. He's played brilliantly. He's one of those, isn't he? He keeps it on the ground. He's, you know, 27 fours, no sixes. Even against maybe the spin of Will Jacks or someone, maybe you're tempted to just loft 1-6. I mean, don't get me wrong, he has got the ability to strike a long ball. We can see that in the white ball format. But, yeah, he's just played an outstanding innings there, hasn't he? And ultimately, yeah, it was a bit of a shame that the rain denied him the chance to get to a career high score, which, you know, I know you've got to say, oh, you've got to start again every morning. But at that point, when he's got the rub of the green, you're thinking that he will go on and make that score. But yeah, I've got nothing bad to say about that innings. It was fantastic from a fantastic player, like you said. And I would say long may he do it again, except against Yorkshire.
I would echo those words, except against Warwickshire, of course, but I'm delighted for Dempsey. I really am. He's a great player, great bloke. I think back to that interaction he had on Twitter when he came to the defence of Tom Lace. He's just always had that air of class about him. So big up to Chris Dent. Miles Hammond as well. Back in the runs. I'm a big fan of Miles Hammond. I was there actually in 2019 to watch him score 68, I believe it was, in a T20 against Middlesex. I've always been very impressed ever since watching him at his home ground in Cheltenham. I was glad to see him back in the runs. And talking of runs, Marcus Harris. He's also in that debate, isn't he, when we talk about best signings of the summer. Just to look at his stats so far this season, 352 runs at 70.4. He's striking at 57.9. And in this week's game, he scored a brilliant 124. So for Gloucestershire, even though in this game you can't quite analyse the bowling, I don't think it's fair. But with the bat in hand, they're showing a lot of guts, aren't they? Even if we look at the wider picture last week, that valiant stand against Lancashire, this is a side which is a real, real unit. They've got great chemistry, a great bond as a side. It'll be interesting. I want to see Gloucestershire do well this year. I really do. I'm not sure whether or not they can contend for the title. I don't think they've got the heavy weaponry that the likes of Lancashire or a Hampshire or a Yorkshire might have. But at the same time, they are
Don't put the pressure on us.
But at the same time, they do have a very, very impressive squad dynamic. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the glorious Gloucesters do in the rest of the 2022 county season. But Matt, that's basically it for Division 1 then. So without further ado, let's have a look at the standings at the end of the fourth round of the 2022 County Championship. Now, at the top of the table, on 67 points, we have Surrey County Cricket Club. A fantastic start to the summer for the London-based outfits. Two wins, two draws, 12 batting bonus points, the most in Division 1. It's been quite the start of the summer for the Brown Caps. In second, we have Hampshire on 59 points. In third, we have the Red Rose of Lancashire on 58 points. In fourth, Matt, we have York County of Yorkshire on 51 points. In fifth, we have Essex on 43 points. Sixth, a Northamptonshire on 38 points. In seventh, I might count, see the defending champions, Warwickshire, on 37 points. In eighth, after that massive victory over the Bears in Taunton, Somerset find themselves moving up the table on 33 points. In ninth, a West Country rivals, Gloucestershire, also on 33 points. And dead bottom of Division 1 at the end of the fourth round are Kent on 30 points. And something just stands out massively from a Kent perspective. Four bowling points. So, yeah, fingers crossed, Kent fans, that the performances can, of course, pick up heading into next week. But, Matt, that is it for Division 1 then for this week's show. Let's move swiftly on to Division 2. And seeing as you are the resident Nottinghamshire expert, what better place to start than at Trent Bridge, where the Outlaws beat Worcestershire County Cricket Club by 5 wickets in a fantastic run chase, it has to be said. So given the fact that you were there in the flesh at Trent Bridge, Matt, what did you make of this game? And in particular, one player's performance, that of Dane Patterson.
I'm going to be honest. Yes, Dane Patterson, brilliant. I thought you were going to say Ed Barnard there. I presume we'll come on to him. We'll come on to him then, won't we? Yeah. But yeah, fantastic. I mean, Patterson, we had an interesting discussion actually in our group chat before this game, based on who was going to drop out for Stuart Broad, because Stuart Broad always coming back into a team that's just beat Durham by an innings. It's a really, really strong team. Who do you drop for him? And we were thinking, oh, who do we go in? And I think the consensus was that it was about to be Patterson. Ultimately, it turned out to be Pattinson, who was rested after playing two games in a row immediately after, flight from Australia. But one of the guys in the group said, watch Patterson now. He'll be out to make himself undroppable. And I mean, what a prediction that was. That was just, yeah, he tore through Worcestershire, didn't he? He just absolutely, he's not the quickest. He's not the You know, the most aggressive, maybe he's not the tallest, but he's just that again, that he puts it on the spot, and he's so difficult to play, and he's so difficult to do anything again. And, you know, I mean, they hit out a little bit, they maybe got a few little runs off him, but yeah, he just, I've not seen many bowling performances like it, to be honest. It was really, really special.
It most certainly was. Yeah, career best figures for the South African seam bowler. 8 for 52 from 15 overs. Extraordinary scenes in Nottingham this week. And you mentioned Stuart Broad, not so much with the ball in hand, but before we get on to Ed Barnard's performance, just a few words on Stuart Broad, the batter, because some of the shots, we always mention the words long handle. When it comes to Broadie, he's a fantastic player to watch. He really is. And this week was no difference, was it, Matt? A quick fire 45 for the England seam bowler.
Not at all. I mean, to be honest, at the county level, he's almost an all-rounder, isn't he, really? He's, you know, when you first put test level bowling, he's not been particularly brilliant for a number of years. And I think that seemed to have created a bit of an illusion. Obviously, the difference was in, you know, he scored 169 at test level. He's clearly a competent batsman a while back. Then he got hit in the nose and he broke his nose. That was the bouncer. His batting average has just gone downhill. But it's still there. The ability is still there. And I think the fact that he got hit there with a short ball, with a bumper, seemed to have created this sort of false perception that he's really, really weak against the short ball. And so for some reason, Worcestershire were doing it in really short. Now, I don't know if this was a bit of an attempt at revenge after that's exactly what he did to them, or if it was an attempt to, you know, that they'd somehow clocked or believed that this was his weakness, because it wasn't. It was just, you know, they for some reason, you know, they were putting it in short and he was just swinging and making contact and sending it crashing over the boundary rope. It was really good to watch. And ultimately, I think it added what you might call valuable runs, because if he'd got out for, let's say, half that, let's say 20 instead of 45, suddenly not situated north of 250. Yeah, I know they got over the line, we'll come on to that, but you know, every run would have counted. They wouldn't have wanted to be chasing anything more. So yeah, it was valuable, entertaining, and probably ultimately pretty crucial.
Valuable, entertaining and crucial. Three words which I think summarise Stuart Broad, the cricketer.
Think so.
Quite nicely. What a player. And great to see him back in county cricket, of course, in a notched shirt. But you mentioned there about the run chase. There was a reason why that run chase was so substantial. And that reason was a certain Salopian all-rounder by the name of Ed Barnard. A career best 163 not out, from 310 balls, 16 fours, 1 6. If there was a knock which, again, personifies the words grit, spirits and fight, it would be this one this week. Ed Barnard almost single-handedly dragged Worcestershire back into contention after being skittled for 159 all out. And in fairness, we do have to say the way in which Worcestershire bowled late on in that first innings was also very good. I just wanted to credit the Worcestershire seam bowlers for that. But Ed Barnard just stood out head and shoulders amongst the rest. And Matt, you were there in person. How impressive was he? You know, in terms of the strike rotation, in terms of the assuredness at the crease, in terms of the shots that he was actually executing, how impressed were you with the Shrewsbury-born all-rounder in this week's game?
Anyway, I mean, you've summed it up really, really well there, mate. He's just that particular little battle that he had with Stuart Broad was fascinating. I mean, you know, you've got some balls to stand up to Stuart Broad and basically, you know, tell him to do one, haven't you? This is one of England's most successful bowlers of all time, and he was just batting him back with ease to dig into that level. And, you know, he shepherded the tail a little bit, didn't he? I mean, Adam Finch scoring 33, that was pretty crucial. You know, that was a potentially quite demoralising partnership for the ninth wicket. You know, it was all about just adding those runs. And yes, obviously not chased it down in the end. Say with relative ease, but, you know, they added valuable runs. And to be honest, at one point when Worcestershire were 18 for 3 on the second day, we were thinking this might not go to the weekend. you know, this might be over in 2 days if Worcestershire gets skittled again. But they didn't. And, you know, what a game. He brought his team back into it and he made a right game out of that. It was almost, really, I mean, I know I'm not too disappointed, but it was almost a little bit disappointing, maybe from his point of view, that he didn't get more wickets and, again, make even more of a game of it when Nottinghamshire were chasing. But, yeah, that was really, really special. And I think the battle with Broad in particular kind of underlines his talent. I mean, I saw, to be honest, mate, it might have been you that either tweeted it or retweeted it or something, but I saw a little kind of picture with all his stats on, and his I think his batting average is north of I think his batting average is above 30 and his bowling average is below 30. Well, that's just the mark of a perfect all-rounder, isn't it, really? That's what you're saying. I mean, you know, all right, fair enough, perfect all-rounder is probably one with a batting average of 45 and a bowling average of 15. But, you know, when you're a jack-of-all-trades, master of both, that is just, yeah, to have that batting average, to have that ability to go toe-to-toe with one of England's best, yeah, it's to be applauded, it really is.
It most certainly is, and to be honest, I do think Worcestershire put up a good fight, in particular after that first innings capitulation at the hands of some marvellous bowling from Dane Patterson. They came back into it, so fair play to the Pairs. I do think they put up a very, very good fight in Nottingham this week. But unfortunately, it just wasn't enough, because Notts, and Matt, I want to know your thoughts on this, have now made that two successful run chases out of two in 2022. Now, I mentioned this in the preview show about this very niche weakness, the fact that they hadn't successfully chased down a total since 2018. All of a sudden, 2022 comes along and they're chasing targets for fun. Why do you think that's the case? Do you think it's a confidence thing? Do you think it's a rhythm thing? Why do you think Notts have suddenly been able to experience this purple patch?
I think, first of all, obviously, you've got to check one of them with a pinch of salt, which is that chase down at Sussex when they're only chasing 14. So it's, you know, maybe the chances are they're not going to be bowled out there. But yes, you're absolutely right. And this goes back to the back end of last season as well, the last game against Yorkshire at Trent Bridge, where they chased it down again. You know, so clearly this has been identified, worked on, and maybe let's not quite say rectified. They could still, you know, they will probably lose one at some point, won't they? But let's say fixed to a certain extent, which I think is massive, massive credit to Peter Moore. Now, he signed a new contract last season, but towards the back end of last season, amid interest from Pakistan, which kind of shows you how highly he's rated. He's got international experience, but he's been at Notts for 2015, I think he was first brought on board or something like that. He's been at Notts for 6-7 years now. And yeah, it took him a while, of course it did. They went through that really barren run between sort of 2019 and Derbyshire last year. But yeah, it's they've found their groove, haven't they? They've got a mix of experience and youth. They've got a mix. They've got the right balance of class. It is a very well-balanced team. With the all-rounders, and that seam bowling cupboard is just stocked. I was thinking, well, you look at this bowling attack, Pattinson, Patterson, Fletcher, Broad, and, you know, without even counting the spin, if you just look at the pace bowling attack, everything, Lyndon James. Oh, yeah, there's another guy with an England cap. You know, this has got to be among the best, maybe if not the best, the most well-stocked and well-rounded fast bowling cupboard. And yeah, to be that good with the ball in hand, to be that good with the bat in hand, 2 3-day wins in a row, it breeds success, breeds confidence, and confidence breeds success. And it's you can talk about a downward spiral. That's the more well known for it, isn't it? But what about an upward spiral? You know, this is they're going places. Lords in a couple of weeks, that will be tough. We'll come on to Middlesex, obviously, but yeah, they're doing well, and I'm excited to be for my part in it, small though it may be.
Well, Matt, it's funny that you mentioned Middlesex, because that is a perfect transition into our next game that we're covering, which was Middlesex's 10-wicket victory over Leicestershire down in Lords. Now, before I mention the game, I just have to mention an off-field thing with Middlesex, but the initiative to have that primary school day. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, on day one of this fixture, Middlesex invited 2,000 kids from 55 different schools from all 17 boroughs in the London County to watch a day of cricket at Lord's. First of all, what a fantastic initiative. We need to see more of that in county cricket, and as Matt is doing on the screen, rightfully deserves to be applauded. It really does a great initiative, and it was fantastic to see the mound stand at Lord's full of primary school kids enjoying what may have been their first ever game of cricket, introducing the next generation. So big up to Middlesex for that. A great initiative, to say the least. And yeah, those 2,000 primary school kids were treated to quite the performance from the Saxes this week. Leicestershire bowled out for 149 runs within 56.5 overs. A certain Shaheen Shah Afridi taking 3 for 54 from 16 overs. Every time I mention his name in county cricket, a massive grin just appears. I'm still so, so happy that he's here and we get to watch him live in the flesh. And Tom Helm, someone who I mentioned last week, again, he used to be in the England conversation with some more good performances, could work his way back into it. He took 3 for 23 from 12 overs as Middlesex just commanded this game, basically from ball one. In terms of the bat as well, 370 all outs. John Simpson, outstanding, 71. Luke Holman, the young all-rounder, scoring 45. But the man of the moment was, of course, a certain man with the nickname Rocky. Mark Stoneman, 108 from 165 balls, laid a brilliant foundation. He's been a revelation for the Saxes, hasn't he, Matt? Again, we mentioned this particular performance so many times on the podcast, but that 376 run opening stand with Sam Robson and Hove in 2021. He's been a really good signing, hasn't he, for the London-based club?
He has been a really good signing, yeah. I mean, you've talked about there already some of the quality signings that we've seen. He's got to be up there as well, hasn't he? I mean, again, yes, he was last season. But yeah, he's got to be up there because he's just that sort of player that can produce that sort of knock and ultimately, you know, contribute to you winning games, which is what it's all about. And yeah, he oozes class, doesn't he? He's got that sort of smoothness about his game and just the... It's just really relaxed about how he goes about things. And yeah, I mean, 15 fours, it can caress it to the fence. He's a really, really good sign. He's a really, really good player. And I think Middlesex fans can be quite delighted that he's with them. I've got to be honest, he's quite well dressed. I noticed that he did his post-match interview in a full suit and tie.
I also saw that.
Yeah, which, you know, fair play to him for going and getting changed and coming out and doing that. You know, at North, we just give him a microphone and do it in the training top. So fair play to Middlesex, fair play to Mark Stoneman, and brilliant all round.
Of course he was. And Matt, again, you set me up quite nicely here. Talking of the words all round, let's talk about a Leicestershire all-rounder. The man with two first names, Ben Mike, a very impressive cricketer, to say the least. He took 4 for 15 in that game. 7 overs, 4 for 15, a very, very good bowling display, to say the least, from the young all-rounder. But the real heartbreaking thing for me was Leicestershire's second innings, because Ben Mike scored 99 out, including 9 fours and 4 sixes. And I genuinely thought this was going to be the moment that he would get that maiden first-class century. He deserves it as well. I think back to 2019, he scored 72 against Hampshire to save a game for Warwickshire in the Championship back then. And he just produces these really crucial and valuable knocks from time to time. And this was one of those occasions. He was nailing the ball. The timing was impeccable. He was really, really good to watch. And then Byron Hendricks got out and he was left stranded on 99 outs. It is a career best score for Ben Mike. But at the same time, he was one run away from not only a maiden first class century, but a century at Lord's as well. So I think he can take a lot of heart for this performance. I thought he was absolutely magnificent for the Foxes, a real bright spark in what was otherwise quite a disappointing performance. But that is gutting, isn't it? I feel absolutely gutted for him. But then again, if I was to offer him any advice, you've scored 99 out now. Ben, you can score 100. You can score 100. You've got my backing 100% unequivocally. And fingers crossed, that turn will come sooner rather than later. But Again, Mats, other than Ben Mike, other than Vion Mulder, he chipped in with a valuable 55. It has to be said, another underwhelming performance from the Foxes. Are you getting worried in terms of their performances with both bat and ball in hand at this point in the season? They haven't really competed to the same extent as a Nottinghamshire, Derbyshire or a Glamorgan, have they?
They haven't, have they? No, it's a shame because they're rapidly developing into a team that you quite like, aren't they? I mean, Sean Jarvis is coming up with a lot of good initiatives. I mean, to be fair, actually, you mentioned Middlesex's initiative there to hand over free ticket to the primary school. Leicestershire did 2,000 free tickets for their last game, didn't they, at home? So, you know, they're all doing this, and that they've all got to be applauded for it. It's fantastic. But yeah, it's on the field. It's a little bit. It's tough, isn't it? I mean, there's no threat of relegation. Obviously, they'll be in Division Two. But I think, you know, you have to be realistic again. Again, they operate on a small budget, but no one was expecting them to get promoted. And I think Middlesex are a really strong team. You know, any team with Shaheen Afridi in it is really strong. So, you know, give it a sense of perspective. This isn't the end of the world. It wasn't exactly like it was a crushing innings and X hundred number of runs. Yes, it's 10 wickets. It's as big as you can go when your opposition have batted twice. But, you know, yeah, it's I think, yeah, just a sense of don't, I would say to Leicestershire, don't lose all heart. You know, don't start making drastic changes because this has happened. Look at it. Look at the positives. Look at Ben Mike. I mean, he's got talent. He's had talent for a few years now, and he will remember what that felt like to get out or to be stranded on 99, and it will drive him forward. And you're absolutely right. He can get it. He's got my backing. He's got your backing. I will be happy for him when he finally gets there. But this is what Leicestershire have got to do. They've got to remember that they've got talented players. They came up short against a better team, and they've just got to move forward. And they'll pick up wins this season. They've just got to move forward and see what they can do relative to the targets that they set themselves, which won't have been particularly lofty.
Yeah, a fair assessment, to be honest, Matt. And talking of a side, which is going in the right direction, again, what a beautiful setup that is for a conversation about Derbyshire County Cricket Club, because this week, Derbyshire and Glamorgan played out a thrilling draw at the Incora Grounds in Derby. Now, before we mention the game and how the game actually panned out, the narrative of this encounter, we have to talk about Shan Massoud, who, in my opinion, has been the signing of the summer of 2022. In the month of April, and again, this is a fantastic stat, by the way, in the month of April, Shan Massoud has finished as the leading run scorer across both divisions. 713 runs, an average of 118.83. He was 2 runs short of Nick Compton's record 715 first-class run total set in April 2012. However, this is the most runs ever scored in the county championship in the month of April. So Shan Massoud is now a record breaker. So congratulations to Shan Massoud. Congratulations to Mickey Arthur and Derbyshire as well for this incredible piece of recruitment. And Saranga Lakmal also chipping in with a five for this week. So Mats, Derbyshire again, a promising team, a team which, when fully fit, emerging into some dark horses, aren't they?
Without a doubt. It's really, really, you know, I said this last week, didn't I? I think they're fed up of being whipping boys. They've had enough of it. They recruited brilliantly with their head coach, and that's more than, you know, Mickey Arthur is worth 10 fantastic overseas signings because of the level of brilliance that he's now permeating throughout the squad. He's just raised standards everywhere, hasn't he? And this is the thing, you know, when I mentioned about Hassan Ali, bringing these high quality individuals in can do so much for everything, for every aspect, for every facet of Derbyshire, for every facet of the county game. And, you know, to be honest, if you can maybe slightly compare it to football, we had Nottingham Forest were winning. They beat Swansea 5-1, and you could hear the City ground from Trent Bridge. But you look at what's happened to them this season under Steve Cooper. They were bottom of the league when he took over. They're chasing automatic promotion now. It's the same for Derbyshire. They were, you know, no one expected them to do much. Suddenly, there's an interview with Mickey Arthur when he takes over, saying he wants to win the one-day cup because he's not losing many players to the 100. It's a staggering turnaround. And yeah, he really, really wants to be applauded for it. He does. And to be honest, I mean, maybe it's the knots in me that's making me a bit, you know, do I have to say this? But I'll be honest, no, long may it continue, because it's really good for the county game to see these left-handed sides become competitive.
Absolutely. Isn't it poetic almost that in a year where the county circuit has been massively scrutinised and the future of clubs like Derbyshire has been questioned, that Derbyshire all of a sudden are chasing promotion? I think it's absolutely fantastic. And again, long may it continue. I think they've been superb in the Championship so far. And someone else who has to be applauded, Brooke Guest, who may or may not be appearing on the podcast at some point this week. But Brooke Guest scored his second and third ever first-class tons in this game. Now, that in itself is very impressive. And I thought the crease, he looked absolutely marvellous in this game. It's even more impressive, though, when you realise that in this game, Brooke Guest became the first Derbyshire wicketkeeper in 126 years, so since 1896, to score centuries across both innings of a county championship match. What an achievement that is. So Brooke Guest, someone to watch out for, both here on the podcast and, of course, in the county circuit, someone whose stock is massively rising. And talking of people who are rising, let's talk about international superstars now. And let's go to certain Marnus Labuschagne from a Glamorgan perspective. 130 in the first innings, his sixth first-class ton in a Glamorgan shirt. A quick-fire 85 in the second innings. Marnus is back. Marnus is back. That is an ominous warning to any bowling attack. In Division 2, I thought he looked in imperious touch at the Incora ground this week. And I mentioned this right at the start of the show. Something when it came to Glamorgan, which was worrying me up until this game, was the opening partnership. In the first three games, Sauter and Lloyd hadn't quite found the rhythm that we would have expected from them. In fact, the partnership was averaging 21. But in this game, in the first innings at least, the pair put on a 100-plus run partnership, which is massive. It's massive for Glamorgan because it shows that they can put on these solid foundations. It allows the likes of Marnus, Sam Northeast, Eddie Byram, Chris Cook, and that middle order to actually have a platform and a base from which to build an innings. And of course, for the pair's confidence, it's massive, in particular David Lloyd as the captain, because you are expected to lead from the front. And in this game, he did exactly that with a well-made 84. But aside from the other three innings, I just wanted to talk about the fourth innings, which concluded today on Sunday, the 1st of May. What a way to kickstart the month in 2022. Matt, if you could, how would you describe the pandemonium, the chaos, the carnage that we saw in Derby earlier today? Because the live streaming figures, there are about 4,000 people concurrent viewers tuning into this. Great numbers, by the way, to say the least. But Glamorgan almost chased this down. They needed 80 runs from the final 10 overs, 6 wickets remaining. They looked brilliant. They looked as though they were going to win it. And then all of a sudden, Derbyshire go bang, bang, bang. They get them 8 down and the chance of victory is over. How would you summarise the events that we've seen today? It was thrilling, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, you mentioned 4,000. Yeah, I was one of them. Just tuning in for the final few overs there. Yeah. It's brilliant. I mean, again, two counties that have been in Division 2 for quite a while, that, you know, for quite a while have not been particularly fancied as anything special, really. There's certainly something special now, aren't they? That was brilliant what they served up there. And it's just another great advert for the game, and it's another great advert for keeping 18 counties. Why would we scrap this? Why would we remove this brilliant entertainment from the top level of the game? Why would we do it? It just doesn't make any sense. And it's You know, this is the thing as well. It's what I can't remember where I heard or saw this, but somebody saying that just because the grounds are quite frequently not very full, and you know what you have to take into account as well is that some of these grounds, you know, a lot of these grounds are, you know, these are massive grounds. You know, Trent Bridge, just because there's so many empty seats there, well, it holds 17,000. You know, you don't even get it full for the T20, which is the most well-attended thing. You're not going to fill them. You have to be realistic. But just because there aren't people in the stand doesn't mean there aren't people watching. And we've seen that with the live stream. And this is, you know, this is the next big thing for county cricket, isn't it? I mean, Lancashire TV, Lancs TV, that they've got themselves in with Allah and Bumble. And that looked like a proper full-on TV broadcast. It was, you know, these counties are chasing this, and because they know that that's where it is. And you can't just say it's three granddads and a dog in the stands. Well, because A, because it's not, and B, because there's a lot more than three granddads and a dog watching on the stream. It's digital now. That's where the audience is. And that's why as well that the free after tea thing is so important, because if you can't commit to the whole game, or the whole time that it's on, or you can't afford it, because, you know, if you don't want a membership, it's 20 quid in a day, 80 quid across 4 days, that's dear, really, it is. And if you just want to go in and watch some top quality cricket and you get more people coming in after tea, then yeah, that is where the audience is now. And anyone who says that this isn't entertaining and this doesn't merit investment and this doesn't merit any sort of advertising is just totally wrong, because we've seen it today. Derbyshire and Glamorgan serving up some fantastic entertainment, and to be honest, I know I said this 10 seconds ago, but long may it continue.
Absolutely, Matt. A great game, a great advert, but don't we keep on saying that? Don't we keep on saying that? Although county cricket does have legitimate problems, there are things which could be improved. When you even look back to like 2016 and that final day at Lord's with Toby Rowland-Jones taking the hat-trick, you think of the title race in 2019, you think of the exceptional Warwickshire victory in 2021. The product hasn't been boring, and it says a lot, doesn't it, when neutral fans are almost having their imaginations captured by a game in Derby on a Sunday in May. It's fantastic. It really is. So, yeah, big up to Derbyshire, big up to Glamorgan. I mentioned this on Twitter. It takes two to tango. Both sides superb in this week's fourth round. But Matt, with eight games down, one game left, let's go down to the county ground in Hove, where Sussex and Durham played out a high-scoring draw at the county ground. Before we mention the game and we take a deep dive and analysis into the actual proceedings down on the south coast this week, I just want to talk about one player in particular by the name of Chiteshwar Pujara. What a knock that was. An absolutely majestic 203 from 334 balls, 24 boundaries, might I just add as well, for the Indian international. And one of the funniest things that I've seen in county cricket this week was him batting with Delray Rawlins. Now, I'm not sure if you saw this, Matt, but obviously on the live stream, people were waiting. The tension was palpable for Pujara to take that single. And Delray, in not just one over, but two overs, on the final ball, kept the strike. And the comments were just popping off. It was absolutely hilarious. It was hilarious from Delray. And to be fair, he did hit quite a few nice shots. Did the Bermudan all-rounder. But oh my goodness, it was just this moment. It kept on building and building and building. I was waiting for like a solid 5-10 minutes on the laptop to send the tweet when he got the milestone. But a fantastic knock. And it has to be said, a very good week with the bat in hand for the Martlets, because aside from Pujara, Mohammed Rizwan scored his first 50-plus score for the county, producing a well-manufactured 79. Tom Allsop, the loanee from Hampshire, scored 66. Tom Clark scored 50. Again, someone to watch out for, recorded his maiden first-class century in the second round. This was a much better performance, wasn't it, from the Martlets across both innings, Matt? When you think about it, 538 all-outs with the bats. They skittled Durham out for 223 in the first innings. Not the worst week at the office for the Southern County.
Not at all, no. A very, very, very You know, yeah, they didn't win, did they? The pitch clearly flattened out even more than it already was. But yeah, I mean, that was just, that's where it starts, isn't it? You know, is cricket a batsman or a bowler's game? Probably a batter's game, isn't it? That's probably what it is. I say that unfortunately as a bowler, but yeah, that's where it starts. You've got to put those runs on the board. And Sussex did that, didn't they? They replied quite magnificently. They took a 300-run lead. And yeah, it shows that, you know, once again, these supposed smaller counties do have the talent behind them. And, you know, you can't dispute that. You know, you look at someone like Tom Haynes, who got his half entry, but he scores quickly as well. You can talk about seeing off the new ball. And, you know, there's kind of two ways you can see off the new ball. You can either block it out, like we saw Karunaratne and Lyth do for Yorkshire, where they scored, I think between them, scored about 20 runs in 20 overs, something like that. Or you can attack them. You can take the shine off the ball by ensuring that it's confidently rolling to the boundary. And I mean, Tom Haynes does that, doesn't he? And that, you know, got his 50, as he did against Notts in the first game of the season. That's what he does. And then Pujara obviously takes the latter option of being the successor to Rahul Dravid, doesn't he? The wall. But yeah, no, that he has been the linchpin of that Sussex batting order, hasn't he? And will continue to be so. Again, another brilliant signing, another one that raises the level of those around him. Although not, you know, not that really that he can raise the level of Mohammad Rizwan. He's another brilliant player, isn't he? But yeah, no, that is a quality Sussex team, and you could probably have to say they deserved a win after taking a 300-run lead. But fair play to Durham for battling it out and, you know, digging in and battling against it.
Well, again, I suppose it's like we mentioned with Essex earlier. I will say that I respected the grit and fight that Durham did show in this game, because that first innings could not have gone much worse, to be honest, apart from Travaskis. Liam, by the way, had a fantastic game, scored 88 in the first innings and then took a fifer in Sussex's innings. In fact, that was just his second ever career first-class five-wicket haul. But aside from that, a massive blow. Chris Rushworth having to be replaced by Ollie Gibson, the concussion substitute. So hopefully, fingers crossed that Rushy is okay and that he can come back for the next game. Of course, a beloved figure up in the northeast, and obviously a massive part of that bowling attack as well. But in the second innings, Sean Dixon, I'm going to mention him first, 186 from 290 balls, 26 fours, a six, and a 64.13 strike rate. That was an incredible innings from the former Kent man. And something which really stood out to me was confidence. He seemed really confident at the crease. Anything on his pads was getting dispatched for four. Not ones, not twos. It's going to the boundary rope. Anything loose was just being dispatched with disdain. So Sean Dixon really, really impressed me in this game. And then when it comes to the England opener conversation, Alex Lees is certainly helping himself. 105 from 262 deliveries. He batted quite well, didn't he, Matt?
He certainly did, didn't he? I mean, I've just turned in a university assignment all about Alex Lees and about Ollie Robinson, having, of course, played for my local team about 10 years ago. His talent is exceptional. His England bow has finally arrived. And, you know, I mean, to be honest, I think he was always going to get picked, wasn't he, for the New Zealand series. And he didn't do anything drastically wrong to consider being dropped after that. But yeah, I mean, he is just constantly churning them out, isn't he? And I mean, yeah, he was missed against Notts because he provides that sort of level of that grit, doesn't he? He digs in at the top of the order. And yeah, he's fantastic individual, fantastic cricketer. And yeah, I'm really, really delighted for Lizzie, it has to be said. And I've really got to come up with a new catchphrase because I'm going to keep saying long may it continue. But honestly, this is the thing. It's like we've got a fantastic product. Let's keep going. Let's keep using it. And yeah, Alex Lees is just the latest example of that.
He most certainly is, Matt. And yeah, fingers crossed, of course, that he can take this form from the county season and replicate it for England in what promises to be a massive summer in 2022 with a brand new head coach, Rob Key, as director of cricket. yeah, hopefully the Three Lions with Alex Lees, who knows, in the team, can of course flip those performances round. But at the end of the fourth round, let's have a look at the Division 2 tables. And Matt, you'll be absolutely delighted to know that Notts are at the top of the tree on 73 points, 14 batting bonus points as well. We said it would be their strong points. That's turning out to be true so far. In second are Nottinghamshire's East Midlands rivals, Derbyshire, on 65 points. Also with 14 batting bonus points, a very strong start to the summer indeed for the Falcons. In third are Middlesex on 59 points. In fourth are Glamorgan on 51 points. In fifth are Durham on 42 points. In sixth are Worcestershire on 40 points. In seventh are Sussex on 31 points. And in eighth and final place in Division 2 are Leicestershire on 29 points. So with the county championship tables done and dusted for the fourth round, let's take a final look at one last table for this week's review show. And that is, of course, our fantasy table on the cricket draft. Now, thankfully, for Steve-O for England CC, we didn't actually have a bad week. We've actually gone up 21 places. We're now 52nd in the league. So some positive signs for the Council Cricket Podcast in our own fantasy league. We're on 5,942 points in total. But in first place, retaining the top spot, is Jimmy Ciego with Johnny Bairstow's Barmy Army, 7,476 points. A fantastic display from Jimmy in this week's round of fixtures. In second, moving from fourth to second, is Jamie Hathaway with Jamie's 11. He's on 7,427 points. And in third are the Missing Links, led by Rory Law, on 7,326 points. So yeah, not just the County Championship League table forming quite nicely, has to be said, the cricket draft table as well, it's beginning to shape up. We'll have to wait and see. Fingers crossed that Steve-O for England CC can get the ball rolling, generate some momentum. Who knows? We might need a 2,000 plus point game week in round five to get back into contention. But of course, listeners, if you want to join that league, the link to that can be found in the description below. But Matt, that basically brings us to yet another titanic episode of the Counts Cricket Podcast. Let's just say it's been quite the round, hasn't it? Lots of draws, lots of outstanding individual performances. We had Somerset winning their first game in a while. It's had it all, it really has. And obviously it's been an absolute pleasure to discuss all of the intricacies, all of the standout performance and major moments from this week with yourself, mate. But that basically brings us to an end to tonight's episode of the Counter Cricket Podcast. To all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. As always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.